AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to be with you, Matt and Patrick, here today. Jam-packed today, because not only do I have my Democrat of the Day, who I'll be chatting with here just momentarily, but coming up here in just a little bit, John Rosengren is going to be joining us. The author is, I got a brand new book on out, Clean Heart. We're going to talk to him about that, and he's going to be doing a Zoom interactive over at Next Chapter Books. That's coming up here tomorrow night. We'll get all that details. That's coming up a little bit later on. Patrick, did you have a nice weekend at all?
I watched a lot of baseball. We'll hold off on the issues. We'll just enjoy the weekend of baseball.
Well, I watched baseball, too. I had my son's baseball, and on Saturday night, great game for him, 2 home runs, and, you know, an RBI, pitched an entire game, a complete game. It was a great game. And then I just had this horrible experience yesterday where you took on one of these teams, which was, you know, it's one of these money teams. And it just was, it's why I think people kind of move away from baseball. It's people that don't understand it's $1,500 to play for 2 months is a lot of money for a lot of people. They get upset when you question that. You know, they're kind of, I think they intentionally plunked my son because, you know, just they're, you know, and the game seemed fixed. I hate saying it, but the game seemed fixed. And just was kind of like one of those things where I came back from that game and I was just so exhausted and tired because it was like, ugh. I mean, it's everything good about baseball. Baseball is a great thing. I love baseball. I love the fact I watched a ton of baseball this weekend myself. And Nelson Cruz is just amazing.
I was watching a Saturday game with the Dodgers and the Giants, mm-hmm. and they had computer-generated fans on the broadcast.
No.
I actually liked it. I didn't think I would, but I kind of liked it.
Were they the robot guys they use in the NFL games? Fox News guys? A bunch of those guys in the stands.
That would have been really funny if they had done that.
I actually liked what they did with the White Sox. They had A.J. Przinski's cutout behind home plate, which I thought was pretty hilarious. You'll see a lot of that this year if we have a season. I don't know if you heard that Miami Marlins have, 12 players and coaches have tested positive for coronavirus after the game yesterday at Philadelphia. They postponed their home opener, which is supposed to be on Tuesday. They canceled the 2 games today. The league is basically saying, so we're going to even see if we even have the rest of the baseball season. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But joining me right now, our Democrat of the day is running for Senate District 2 on the very northern tier of Minnesota. Alan Roy is kind enough to take some time today to talk about his Senate campaign and talk about how you can help out his Senate campaign as well. Alan, thank you much. I appreciate the time.
Well, thank you so much for having me on here today.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I've talked with a lot of people from, you know, 2. I also talked to some people from Senate District 3. You guys, your Senate districts up there, holy cow. You have, the entire Red Lake Nation is in there. You run from Park Rapids all the way up to Engle Inlet, right?
Yeah, we go all the way up to the Canadian border. They tell me it's the second largest Senate district in the state.
Yeah, only 3 is bigger, and that's only because they take everything on the northern tier over to Lake Superior. How many miles? I mean, this is why we're going to get to all the details about Alan here in a second, but I want everyone to call his campaign, give a donation, because how many miles do you have to drive from the southern part of your district to the very northern? Well, you can't go to the very northern part of the district without a boat, but to go up to Lake of the Woods, how many miles is that?
Well, it's like from where I'm at, I live on White Earth Reservation, so it takes us about a 4-hour drive. So, wow. Literally, like for me to get to Minneapolis, it's a 4-hour drive. For me to get up to Baudette up there, it's about a 4-hour drive. So, wow. It's a lot of miles, I tell you.
Well, and this is why I want everyone, you need to make a donation at the end of this to Alan Roy's campaign, because this is one of those campaigns where, you know, money is a premium. Donations are something that's going to be needed. We'll get to that here in a little bit, but let's find out a little bit more. Who exactly is Alan Roy?
Well, thank you. I am, first of all, I will introduce myself very quickly in Ojibwe, because I am Ojibwe.
Please.
Bujuginawa, Wabishki Mayingan Indigo, Alan Roy, Migi Kanem Guyan Gaye, Mongan Dodem, Gawaba Biganikagishkoni Ganangan Dunjiba. I said my Ojibwe name. Hello, everyone. My Ojibwe name is White Wolf. I'm also known as Alan Roy. I'm from the Loon Clan, and I'm born and raised on White Earth Reservation. I I currently serve on the White Earth Tribal Council. I got elected here in 2018, and before that, I was born and raised in the Senate District 2 there, went to high school in Detroit Lakes, went to the University of Minnesota, graduated in 2006, and then I joined the Army. I volunteered and became an officer and went off and did some active duty service, went to Operation Iraqi Freedom, came back, entered the private sector, ended up working for the state, and using my GI Bill to work through school. I got my master's in public affairs from Humphrey School there in Minneapolis. And right around that time, I met Chairman Terry Tibbetts, who worked for the White Earth Tribal Council. And he said, hey, you're pretty good at this legislating stuff, because I had worked on a school project where we were able to get about $6 million worth of legislation for the tribe back in 2016 there. And he said, hey, you're pretty good at this. Why don't you run for tribal council? And so I did, and I got elected, and it's been about 2 years now. And so we work with the federal counterparts, state counterparts, the governor's office. We even work with the White House. We've got work with the Senate, the House, all over the place. And a lot of the folks said in the district, hey, you know, Rod Skoy, this is Roger Moe's old seat. You guys probably already know Roger Moe. He's a good friend of mine. Rod Skoy, this was his seat in 2016. He lost to Paul Utke, and he's the Republican. He's the incumbent. And so a lot of folks approached me. They said, hey, you understand the needs of the district. You got two reservations in here. You got the White Earth Reservation, White Earth Nation. You got Red Lake Nation. And you've got a lot of folks that are just regular Minnesotans that want a lot of support and development in the area, and you understand our needs. Would you please run? And I thought about it, and I talked with the wife, and I said, you know what? I think you're right. We can do a lot better here. And so back in January of this year, I made an announcement. I said, hey, I'm running for state senate, and we've been off to the races since.
You know, it's interesting you say that about, and I want to talk about the Republicans, because I know I lived in Bemidji for a while, and Native American issues have frankly just been ignored, unfortunately, by the current government and for many years, not just Republicans, but Democrats. But one of the things that happens is when Republican runs, they talk about all of a sudden, oh, well, we care about Native American issues. We care about Native American issues. Have you seen any? You've had a Republican senator there. Have you seen any real care about Native American issues from the Republican Party now that they represent that district?
Well, I mean, we've worked with Senator Utke on the tribal council on a number of issues. And, you know, we've had a little bit of success, not a whole lot. Mm-hmm. We do have a lot of there's a lot of room for improvement, I will say.
Very diplomatic way to say that.
But the thing is, what's been very helpful is we have an indigenous woman, Peggy Flanagan, who's also my cousin, by the way, White Earth enrollee, and she's the lieutenant governor, and we got Tim Waltz down there. But Peggy, she's been such a champion for Native Americans in the state here, and you know we've been able to get some things done because of her voice in the state government. Now it'd be nice to get more Native voices in the state government. And we can make a difference. I mean, we work on issues not just in the Senate district, but the whole state of Minnesota. Just like today, down here talking with tribal members on a number of issues. And like I said, a lot of these issues that they claim to be working on, they usually drag their feet right around election time, and they do one or two things, and they're like, "You see what I did for you?" Mm-hmm. You know, and you're just like, "Well, we could have really used your help 4 years ago," and you know, so you're not fooling anyone. And I think me being from the area, me being a veteran, somebody that understands the area, somebody born and raised in the area, I think we can do a lot better. I really do.
And I think one of the things that's important to make sure we point out is that this is not about, you know, obviously only serving Native Americans, but you have had Native American reservations in districts where they just have been ignored. You know, they just kind of get ignored, and you have a large proportion of the population there. It's about making sure that your platform, your agenda is well-rounded and serves all the people of a district, not just the Caucasian, you know, European descendants. And I think that is such an important element, because I think we can, let's run them. It's good health care. Everyone needs good health care. Broadband. Everyone needs good broadband. Quality education. Everyone needs quality education. It's not just, you know, one portion of the population that needs this. Everyone needs this. And I think that if you have politicians who are only looking at part of the population as the only people they care about, you're never going to get a complete plan.
And that's absolutely right. That's why we've developed a platform here for my campaign that is designed to help the people. Is designed to help everyone in the Senate district there, but also everyone in the state of Minnesota. You talk about health care, right? There's literally three things that are constantly popping up when I'm out talking on folks or when people see me on the street. It's, Alan, we've got to take care of the health care system.
Yeah.
We've got folks up here in the Senate district. A lot of these hospitals don't even have ventilators in them. So if someone gets sick, you know, for example, up in Baudette, they got to go all the way down to Bemidji. That's like a 2-hour drive. It's you got that there. And then you take a look at the economy. I mean, people have lost a lot of jobs and a lot of folks are trying to get back to work. So we've got to address the health care system. We've got to address the economy. But what's coming up right now, I got to tell you, what's coming up right now, me being a parent, I got three kids, school-age children, all elementary. What's coming up right now is education. What are we going to do about the kids? Are they going to go back to school? Are they not going to go back to school? Is it going to be hybrid? Is it going to be online? What about the technology? What about those families that don't have the internet, right? Because a lot of rural areas in the state of Minnesota, they don't have the broadband. They don't have a lot of these things that can help facilitate these issues. And so these are some three major things that are going to define this election, especially in outstate Minnesota. Those three areas: healthcare, the economy, and what are we going to do about the education, because it's coming up quick.
And I think when you, and there is a lot of questions, and there is no one right answer. I wish there was. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where and we're all kind of holding our breath. I mean, it's, you know, you look at that, there was a story today out of the Star Tribune. We're talking about the rodeo they had up in Effie. And, you know, great, you were able to go out and enjoy it. But in 6 weeks, if all of a sudden we have a massive outbreak, you just brought up the problems with the hospitals. You know, how safe is it going to be to start the schools if all of a sudden you start having spikes in northern Minnesota because of a rodeo? And so, I mean, there is no right answer here. You know, it's kind of one of those things where you need to have malleability, and it can't just be one party's platform. It has to have, you have to have a unique chorus of voices which might say, you know what, it's probably better if some of these schools don't open or have a hybrid program, but at least you have some ability to make the program malleable.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with that. Like, I mean, what the people of Minnesota, what Minnesotans want are common sense solutions to common sense problems. And that's the way I'm running my campaign. I'm running on things, and I'm presenting some common sense solutions. We're listening to people across the spectrum. I've got, believe it or not, I've got a lot of Democrats that support me, but I also got a lot of Republicans that support me in the area, because they want to see results. That's what Minnesota wants. Minnesota wants to see results. They want to see that we're taking care of the people, and I feel very, very strongly that we can do that when we get elected in November.
Well, and I mean, my goodness, all you have to do is look at the insanely bad response to the coronavirus from the Republican Party and realize, well, they're not going to help you. I mean, their ideas are broken. We need to have, and once again, this is a seat that's been held by Democrats. We need another DFL-endorsed candidate in there. Alan Roy is a great candidate. Now, everyone who is listening to me in the Twin Cities right now, it's great you have your local DFLer. Help them out. If you are in a safe seat, I want you to drive some of your money up to Alan's campaign. just on the gas bills alone, to be able to go up there and talk to communities and talk to these people, that is a, this is a very different district than anything we have in the metro area. You, we have to make sure we give him the financial resources that he needs so he can pull off the campaign that he has to put out there. And the reality is that if we're not willing to fight and help out Alan Roy in Senate District 2, it's no one's fault but our own. So for goodness sakes, help out and volunteer. I imagine you, Alan, like all the other campaigns we've talked to, volunteer opportunities are, you know, morphing, they're changing, but there are volunteer opportunities for people to help out in your campaign, right?
Absolutely. We're looking for folks to help us out with, especially right now, we're going to the air. We know we're avoiding going door to door, but we want to do a lot of phone calls. Okay. That is where we're going to win this. Social media. If you go to my Facebook page, all right, Alan Roy for State Senate, share, like, comment, share. Put it out there so all your friends, all your family see it. You go to my website. There's opportunity to fill out a volunteer sign-up thing. You fill that out. Somebody from the campaign will get in touch with you. We're looking for people to do phone calls. We're looking for a lot of people. And as far as the fundraising goes, I got to tell you, we need help. We do need help. But I will say this. I took a look at first-time candidates for Senate District 2. I've raised about $25,000 for this seat in a pre-primary report. That is more than any other first-time candidate that I know of for Senate District 2. So we're already smashing records. We're putting up a fight. Mm-hmm. We want to win this thing. We're willing to do whatever's necessary to flip this seat blue, and we need your help.
And it's we need to take the seat. We need the seat back to take the Senate back. The webpage, roy4sd2.com. That's roy4sd2.com. Donate, volunteer, help out. Let's get Alan Roy into St. Paul to represent Senate District 2 for the DFL. Alan, all my best. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today.
Miigwech. Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
My pleasure. Alan Roy, Senate District 2, the DFL Democrat of the day right here. We're going to take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Now, more than ever, we are being faced daily with the topic of human mortality. And for many people, estate planning has been top of mind. Getting your estate planning done now can be easy and cost-effective. Schroman Law offers virtual options for initial consultations so that new clients can safely initiate the process. With many facing uncertain financial situations, Schroman Law also offers affordable fees for legal documents. Learn more at schromanlaw.com. That's schromenlaw.com.
Hi, Alex of Better Futures Minnesota. Does your business or organization need janitorial services, lawn care, or snow services? Obtain a free, no-obligation estimate from Better Futures Minnesota when you mention that you heard about us on AM 950. Our supervised, hardworking, and affordable crews will handle your interior and exterior building and property maintenance needs while you help men in your community transform their lives and walk on a positive path to success. It's a win-win. To learn more, go to betterfuturesminnesota.com under business services.
Let's talk about getting your home zero-res clean. To say your home has been lived in these last few months is probably an understatement. Have you assessed the damage? Dirty carpet, food stains, pet accidents. Don't just call the cheapest cleaners because you think you're getting a deal, because you'll pay for it. Call Zero Res with over 8,000 real customer reviews online and a 4.9 Google rating. Right now, get 3 rooms of carpet Zero Resified starting at just $139 when you mention AM 950. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMinnesota.com.
I checked the parking lot before I left work. I looked in my back seat before I got in my car. On my way home, I watched in my rearview mirror to make sure I wasn't being followed. I did all the things I was supposed to do to keep myself from being sexually assaulted.
But she forgot. I was her partner.
I was her partner. I was her partner. I was.
You have the right to say no to your partner. Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
NEP Corporation in Minneapolis reminds us to thank our doctors, nurses, and first responders for their professionalism, commitment, and bravery. While they work tirelessly around the clock, these men and women are willing to put their lives on the line for us with little or no thanks. They're the backbone of our country, and they deserve our admiration. This thank you is from NEP Corporation at 4905 West 35th Street in Minneapolis, serving the community since 1973. You can give them a call at 927-4569.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Alan Roick, that's a very solid DFL candidate right there. That district, it's like three. It's like Senate District 3 up in the north. It's just so huge. And, you know, and you can tell a Republican, you know, drew it. I mean, they basically tried to admit every major town out of it to try to limit the amount of you know, kind of communities where you might get more Democrats in there, and to try to offset the Native American tribe votes. But, you know, it's needless to say, this is a seat we can still win. It just, we need the resources. And trust me, this guy's going to have to drive a lot of miles. His campaign team will need that. So make a donation to Alan Roick's campaign if you could. Hey, guess who's in town? Ivanka. That's right. Who, by the way, I saw the picture of her getting ready for her event where she was going to introduce the opening of the first missing and murdered cold case office for a Native American in the United States. And multiple people are in town, especially within the Trump administration. First of all, they set this thing up and they put Native American headdresses down like it was a Sunday NFL recap, and they were the helmets from an NFL team. And I'm like, okay, no, you don't do that. You don't, you know, culturally appropriate for set design, for God's sakes. Don't do that. Thanks for Sally Joe over at Blue Stem Prairie for pointing that out. But she also pointed out another thing. Do you know who seemed to be missing from this? Was the women behind, the women politicians behind the bill that got this passed, the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force. They weren't invited to this. Mary Kanish Podine, of course, friend of the station here, Standing Rock Lakota, descendant and author of the bill that established Minnesota's Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Task Force, tweeted, who have worked so hard in the past 4 years to educate, acknowledge the historic horrors of being trafficked. She was not, you know, invited to the event. Neither was Jamie Becker Finn. Neither one of them. You would think that they would probably be high on the list. You would think. Apparently not. On top of that, it should be mentioned, they turned it into a political rally because they clearly, I mean, the Republicans didn't start this process. The Democrats did. But when it becomes to them to open it, the Republicans are all there to take credit for it, and they purposely don't invite any of the Democrats there. That's just, you know, especially the Native American, the indigenous politicians that made this happen. That's inexcusable. Accompanied by U.S. Secretary of the Interior David Bernhardt, was also in Duluth earlier in the day to meet with U.S. Representative Pete Stauber for a tour of Duluth Pack, a factory and store known for its canvas and leather bags. Okay, I want to stop right there because I want to make sure we understand they are pivoting away. Stauber, for 2017 and 2018, campaigned on, we're going to bring mining back. We're bringing mining back. I tried to find the numbers on how many mining jobs have been lost on the Iron Range since 2018 alone. It varies. It's not a clear number, but at least 2,000 mining jobs have left. This is since Stauber was elected. And once again, I need to verify those numbers. I'm going to be straightforward. I couldn't find the exact number. I had varying numbers and they were disagreeing, but I'm going to split the difference. 2,000 jobs gone. That's not bringing mining back. And all you guys that voted for Stauber up on the 8, let me make sure I point something out. You guys are the ones who said, well, they're going to bring mining back. Well, now they haven't. And you're still sitting there going, and we love you so. No, this is an abusive relationship. They are not going to help you. They are not going to help you. And it's nice that he goes to Duluth Pack, okay? But once again, Duluth Pack, a factory and store known for its canvas and leather bags for outdoor use, you are welcoming in one of the worst, possibly the worst environmental administration since the 1880s. And that's saying something. These guys hate environmental regulations. They will rip up the Iron Range. They will rip up the Boundary Waters. They will destroy Minnesota's natural resources to get anything out of the ground they can. And you guys, an organization, a business that's basically selling your product to people that enjoy the environment and the outdoors, are welcoming in this clown car, for goodness sakes. Now, you guys, I mean, I know a lot of people are saying, I'm going to boycott. I don't call for that stuff here. I generally don't. But what I will say is this. These guys are saying, well, we're getting a ton of orders now from Republicans who are happy that once they announce that they're going to be there. I hope you're making a lot of money, because I can tell you right now, there's a lot of people that will not forget this. And the last I checked, most of the people that go out into the wilderness are generally these kind of earthy granola folks that generally vote liberal. They don't forget. So I hope you make a lot of money over the next few weeks on Republicans making orders, because you're going to have to offset a lot of orders you're about to lose. That's the choice you make, and that's unfortunate. Both stops, by the way, the Bloomington stop and the Duluth stop, were protested by the protesters, and of course, DFL leaders criticized them, who derided the tour as a campaign photo op. Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, a member of the White Earth Nation of Ojibwe, slammed the president for doing little to promote the health and safety of Native Americans while demonstrating and celebrating behavior that perpetuates violence against Native American women. Like I said, all you need to know is the people that had nothing really to do, that they had to twist arms and stuff to get this organization started to start dealing with the crimes against Native American women. The people that were behind it were not invited. I don't know at what point you guys get over your... I mean, if it's only about racism, if you truly only love Trump because he's racist, there's nothing the Democrats can do to change your mind, because you're always going to love the racist. But if you truly thought that this guy was going to be some sort of economic whiz kid, he's destroyed the northern Minnesota economy. It's only going to get worse from this point forward. They're trying to hand as many taxpayer dollars off to millionaires and billionaires, and they don't want to give you any more extension of the coronavirus relief funds. But you tell me how they're helping us out. No, they're not. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we do return, the author John Rosengren is going to join us. A Clean Heart, a Novel. We'll talk about that as well. Of course, you got a live event coming up at Next Chapter tomorrow night. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
The Electric Fetus is now open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 6. There are limits to the number of people allowed in the store and masks are required. Web and phone orders are available for curbside pickup, but the Electric Fetus is currently only buying used vinyl and DVDs by appointment only at this time. Visit electricfetus.com for the latest info and to shop for music, gift department merchandise, and gift cards. 2000 4th Avenue South, Minneapolis, and electricfetus.com.
Hi, this is Chad Hobart with Social Media MN. If you're running for office or a grassroots ballot initiative, getting out door-to-door made a lot of sense before coronavirus. Progressive candidates historically win elections with one-to-one voter contact, door-knocking, and by organizing. With coronavirus, candidates and ballot initiatives need to pivot and recalibrate with a digital marketing strategy to provide one-to-one voter contact and organizing opportunities. An effective digital strategy will likely determine if your race goes blue this year or whether you're singing the blues. So, if you want to be singing Hail to the Chief on Election Day, Social Media MN can help. For a hassle-free consultation, contact us today at 763-244-4058. That's 763-244-4058. Or visit us online at socialmediamn.com. That's socialmediamn.com.
Not only does Rudy Luther Toyota have a great selection of new vehicles, but Rudy Luther is also one of the largest volume Toyota certified used vehicle dealers in the country. They have better prices than many non-certified dealers, and all their vehicles go through a comprehensive inspection and reconditioning process. And Rudy Luther pays you top dollar for your trade-in, even if you don't buy a vehicle from them. Whether looking for an upgrade or looking to get rid of a car you no longer need, you'll get a great return with Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
If you have a painting project, you should consider hiring Nick Slavic Painting and Restoration Company. We've been awarded nationally for craftsmanship, are highly professional, responsive, and fairly priced. If you feel overwhelmed by starting a painting project, we make it easy from start to finish. We move furniture, vacuum, sweep, dust, and put your home back the way we found it. There is a difference. Our professionalism sets us apart. Visit NICKSLAVIK.com. That's NickSlavic.com to learn more.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is the EatLocalMinnesota.com restaurant of the week. Two great options for summer for enjoying live music from a safe distance. First, they're lakeside driving concerts. Enjoying from the comfort of your car, the brand new Lakeside Cafe, shelter table seating for couples and parties of four. It's more intimate, safe, a distance safe way to enjoy food and top-notch Twin Cities performers in the open air. Once again, so you got Crooners, you got the drive-in concerts, you have the Lakeside Cafe. Those are your two options there. Of course, it's great food over there at Crooners. Moore Lake, Highway 65, just north of 694. It's right on N65, just north of 694. Right there, perfect location. As a matter of fact, and one of the things that's really nice is that Crooners does give you the ability to enjoy music, which is, and nothing against the kind of the what's happened here with having to do the live streaming, but if you're looking for some live music, Crooners has got you covered. You actually still have that option out there. So Crooners Lounge and Supper Club, croonersmn.com, croonersmn.com. That's the eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week. John Rosengren is kind enough to join us. He's the award-winning journalist and author. He's recently nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. Has won more than a dozen writing awards. His articles have appeared in The Atlantic, The New York Magazine, Reader's Digest, Sports Illustrated, The Utney Reader, of course, as well. He's a well-known author of a lot of great sports books, Blades of Glory, as well as also Hammering Hank George Almighty in The Say Hey Kid, Hank Greenberg, A Hero of Heroes. And his latest novel is A Clean Heart, a novel by John Rosengren. He's kind enough to join us today to talk about that novel, as well as also a live event coming up here with Next Chapter Books. John, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Well, good afternoon, Matt. Nice to see you.
It's nice to be with you, my friend. I'm actually quite honored. You're a wonderful writer, sir. I don't get to talk to too many really well-known, recognized authors, and you've had a great career of writing. Especially, I've really enjoyed some of your sports books here.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Like Mark Twain said, when he receives a compliment, he always feels embarrassed because he feels like people haven't said enough. No, I'm just kidding. It's very generous to say that.
I was going to go with the Bette Midler line, which is this: enough about me talking about myself. You talk about me now.
Right. Well, I think you're wonderful too, Matt. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Let's talk a little bit, first of all, about the book A Clean Heart. This is, it's interesting. You've talked about how in your youth, you overcame alcoholism, and you've been sober ever since for a long time. You wrote some of your earlier books were directly addressing this. Life is Just a Party, A Portrait of a Teenage Partier, and the big book Unplugged, A Young Person's Guide to Alcoholics Anonymous. But then you moved into sports books. Why, talk a little bit about the decision to when you talk about A Clean Heart, going back and talking about addiction specifically in the many forms, as well as dealing with a recovery center, a home there, dealing with kids that have issues?
Well, I was lucky. When I was 17, I went through treatment for my own alcoholism and drug addiction. And I had a teacher in high school, my journalism teacher, Roger Mann at Wayzata High School, helped spark the dream to become a writer. And as a result of that, I wrote this loosely autobiographical first book, a collection of short stories called Life is Just a Party that you mentioned. And I went on to write some other books and, continue to live this dream. But I love writing fiction. And so after working in an adolescent treatment center out in Nampa, Idaho, which is just next door to Boise, Idaho, where I lived, I got the idea for this novel. And this is even a little more loosely autobiographical, about a young man working in this adolescent treatment center run by a nun, a hard-drinking nun with an MBA. And he has to confront the craziness of the unit, as well as his mother, who's also dying of alcoholism. And I like writing nonfiction because I get to tell stories of what's actually happened, and I like writing fiction because I get to make stuff up. And there are challenges and rewards of both, but addiction and recovery is obviously close to my heart, and so it's something, you know, it's a territory I know well, having lived it, and so I welcome the chance to kind of plumb those depths.
I find it's and one of the things which is very I imagine was a source of a lot of material for you is what I kind of the dancing on the edge. It's the, you know, here you are a recovering alcoholic, and then you go on out there and you're trying to help others. But as your book sort of says, it's, you know, and this is a piece of fiction. Once again, it's a novel, mm-hmm. you know, but at the same time, you're dealing with people who make being sober difficult at times. You know, it's the challenge of that. And I mean, and obviously, you know, I'd love to hear from your you know, as much as you can talk about your personal experiences, but also the approach in writing this, because I mean, obviously, that's something that I think that a lot of people who are recovering addicts, that's something they want to try to avoid. It's not like one of the old Cheers episodes where Ted Danson played an alcoholic bartender, recovering alcoholic who owned a bar. I mean, people are like, why would you want to do that? I mean, talk a little bit about that from your own perspective and how it helped you in writing here, because it would seem like that would be a very difficult element to get past.
Well, you're right. You can't wish sobriety upon anyone. They have to come to it themselves and have to want it. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about receiving the gift of desperation, and someone has to hit their bottom before they're really willing to accept help. But the paradox, too, of Alcoholics Anonymous is being able to, or one stays sober by helping others. And so the idea is you can't keep it unless you give it away. And so to be able to, it can be extremely frustrating to work with other people who maybe aren't quite ready or who relapse. At the same time, it's terribly gratifying to see someone grasp the program and latch on to that gift of sobriety and start living out the principles in their lives and even helping other people. And there's a tremendous ripple effect. Just as with an alcoholic, you know, they leave a lot of damage in their wake. Well, the mm-hmm. recovering alcoholic and addict also leaves a lot of goodness in, or you know, the affects a lot of goodness in their lives, and so that extends beyond themselves. And I find it necessary and helpful to be around others who are engaged in the same struggle I am, because it's not something that just goes away. Even though I quit drinking and smoking marijuana, they used to call us baby dope fiends back when I was 17. You know, and I'm 56 now. It's still an ongoing struggle to just live well, and so it helps to have others who are on that journey around me, wherever they are in the process.
Well, and I know, you know, myself, I was never, you know, put in jail or, you know, recommended for a 12-step program, but I'm just out of my own health. I basically said, you know what, I'm done drinking, and I walked away from it. And that I've noticed that, and if, I mean, there are just times where all of a sudden it's like, wow, beer would be good, and you're like, I haven't had a beer in you know 7-8 years. I mean, why would I want one now? You know, you have that constant struggle, and it's I think one of the hardest things for me to think about when I stopped drinking myself was I stopped when I was later in life. I mean, it had to be for yourself a very ominous and large, maybe ungraspable task when you started saying, I'm going to be sober at 17, because you have your entire life ahead of you. It, there must be an element, and you talk about this in the book with the kids that are in the novel, that you're dealing with people that have to look at your life has really just begun. You're going to be sober for a long time. And whereas that's a good thing and that's achievable, obviously, by yourself, it's also got to be an incredibly intimidating step for someone so young to realize I need to stop this or else I'm going to be dead before I'm in my 20s.
Right. Well, I remember them hearing, and I think Carter tells this to the kids he works with in the novel, that addiction ends in three possible scenarios: death, insanity, or jail. And yet there is a fourth case scenario, too, and that's recovery. Mm-hmm. And that's the one he's trying to show others, and I was fortunate to arrive at myself. So, you know, and one can't, I think, look, or it's overwhelming if one thinks, oh, God, I got to do this for the rest of my life. But if one, you know, that's why we say one day at a time. It's like, yeah, all I have to do is today, just the next 24 hours, and that makes it much more manageable.
When you're writing a book of this nature, and obviously you've had experience of the characters in the novel, how, you know, is it difficult? I mean, when you say, do I really want to put someone I know personally, and I'm, you know, I'm not going to talk about any specifics, but you have, you're dealing with people that are going through a very
tough. It's not about my mom. She wants you to know that. Really, it's not. But, that's not her.
But okay, mom aside, when you're dealing with teens, and you yourself have had this experience in dealing with treatment centers, you know, how hard is it to write something individual enough to where, you know, you're not talking about, you know, obviously you can be inspired by a story, but you might not want to necessarily convey that over to a novel. You understand? I mean, I just, you know, is it hard to convey that without all of a sudden saying, well, I'm writing too much that this person could identify who I'm talking about?
Right, absolutely. There are a couple of characters who are very closely drawn to their inspirations. And then there are others who are quite, you know, just were really fun to make up, that I just kind of started with a loose idea of who they were, and then they, you know, as I started writing about them, kept writing about them, got to know them better, they just evolved, and they were really fun to create. And so I think the one can't be handicapped by thinking, oh, no, so-and-so will recognize herself, or, you know, my brother's going to beat me up if I write this. And so, you know, I think the writer just has to take over and let it come out, and then later read through it and say, okay, cut that or leave that in.
Well, your mom obviously had some issues. she kind of cracked you a little bit on that one. You know, that's also trouble. I know people who are writers that they sometimes that you know, they'll say, no, truly, I mean, even though there's a mother in here, it's not you. And that mm-hmm. sometimes I imagine it gets, trips you up as well.
Right. And I can't deal with my mother issues on live radio, but I will tell you that there was a woman at the treatment center I worked at who was about 12 years older, who became a very close friend and then a fantasy, and she was the inspiration for Natalie in the book.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask
maybe that's my Oedipal complex playing out. I don't know.
Sister Mary Xavier, yes. A hard-drinking nun, as it's described. You talk about that character. How familiar is that character in your real life, or is that one that you just basically built on its own?
You know, she was one that probably sprung out of my youth attending Catholic grade school, because mm-hmm. I was schooled by the Sisters of Saint, School Sisters of Notre Dame. But I did not know a Sister Mary Xavier. She was one that I just started playing with and getting to know as I wrote, and then she just had these, you know, she was so hardcore and hard driving and wanted to make money and didn't really understand chemical dependency, and that lent itself to some comic issues. And I just, and presented, you know, all sorts of problems for the good folks trying to, the therapist trying to help the kids get sober. So I just had fun with her as I got to know her. And then I also, she's in some ways a very sad character. And so I had felt compassion for her as well, and she just evolved and became this person, you know, that I got to know, I guess.
The book, I one of the things I find it's important to write, I think, about recovery, recovering from addiction. And it gives people hope. It gives people presence there. But I will make a point, I think, that it makes me a little bit frustrated when I see writing out there, because it almost seems like if you're going to write about someone who is recovering, that you have to treat it as if it can't just be a character who I don't drink. You know what I mean? It's kind of one of those, you know, there are some characters. I know in the Stephen King book, Dr. Sleep, there's a recovery element that's going on in there. And there are people who are recovered, but there always seems to be this mentality that if you're dealing with a character that has to deal with recovery and addiction and stuff, that it's hard to not write that character in just a regular environment. And I think that this is not something, I think it's our culture as we have it here. I think that when I look at football games and I still see, you know, all the ads for booze, and, you know, you go up on YouTube and half the ads are for booze. It's this mentality of either you're drinking, or the mentality is, oh, well, you were broken and you needed to fix yourself. It doesn't just seem like, I think that's a crime to a point for the way that people are written. Do you think that's what do you think about that thought process? Because I don't know if necessarily there are enough people that write characters where they are the alcoholism is there, but it's not. It's not the driving force. I think there are people always kind of get lost in that. You know what I mean?
Well, I set my novel in a treatment center, and so obviously themes of addiction recovery are central mm-hmm. to it in the workplace, and as well as in the lives of these characters. And once one descends into the depths of addiction, it is a central feature of their life and does tend to dominate their thoughts and actions. And on the flip side, recovery can do that as well. Once one is trying to recover from the addiction, you know, that often needs to be in the forefront of a person's mind to stay in recovery. And so, you know, having lived that for many years, that's been that was something I wanted to explore in the book. And the paradox of recovery, which I think is surrender. And then that's something that Carter in the novel is trying to get across to the various characters he encounters, is that one can't control it, that once one surrenders, that's when one finds one's strength. And so it's, you know, admitting one's powerlessness is how one gains power.
The weakness, as long as you have the weakness there, there's always the temptation.
Yeah, although for most addicts and alcoholics, they're relieved of the craving, and then it's more just the challenge of how to live life well on a daily basis, you know, not let their defects of character dominate them.
I'm presuming you've done a lot of these Zoom, groups like Next Chapter Books. I want to make sure I mention they have a Zoom event tomorrow night at 7:00. You can go register at Next Chapter Books. They have a link there where you can sign up for this. Have you been doing these around the country quite a bit?
Well, I've done several of them, and they're actually more fun than I expected. And so I'm really looking forward to tomorrow night as well here in St. Paul, just across the river.
Well, all my best on this. I think it's very enjoyable. Writer is the fact that you're so eclectic, and you've got your great sports books. But getting back into this, do you feel as if your next books you're going to kind of stay into this category and explore more on these novels?
Well, I have another one novel I'm working on. It's not necessarily related to addiction, and then I have a couple other book ideas as well that are nonfiction, not necessarily addiction either. And so it's just, for me, I tend to be curious about a lot of subjects. And so I've written about a variety of things just because I want to learn more about them. And so I explore them, whether that's baseball or gambling or right now I'm writing about, or I've written about the Ku Klux Klan recently, which seems very relevant to race relations. So it just goes on and on.
I look forward to your next books. A Clean Heart, novel by John Rosengren. Once again, you can find that over at Next Chapter Books. And reminder, the Zoom event is tomorrow night at 7:00. John, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on, Matt. I really appreciate your interest.
I appreciate the time. I really do. John Rosengren, kind enough to take some time with us today. Let's take a break. We'll come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, this is Laura. Listen to Food Freedom Radio every Saturday at 8 a.m. or anytime via podcast. Our individual health is connected to the health of each other, and connected to the health of the earth. We know the problems with the dominant food system: climate change, deadening soils, nitrates in the water, factory farming, injustice, concentration of wealth. How do we both as individuals and as a community step up and support a living food system which honors the earth? Tune to Food Freedom Radio every Saturday at 8 a.m. and remember to support your independent farmers.
Join over 300,000 Minnesota families by choosing Warner Stelling to be your appliance specialists. Our customers have helped us be very good at selling, installing, and servicing appliances. We work hard to earn your business. Choose Warner Stelling to be your appliance specialist.
Hi, Minnesota. Governor Tim Walz here. We're in an unprecedented battle against the COVID-19 virus. The state of Minnesota is doing everything possible to keep you safe, but we need your help. We need you to stay home, flatten the curve on COVID. Let's get through this thing together.
Even though these are challenging times, All Energy Solar is still committed to providing you a cost-effective, environmentally friendly energy system through their zero-contact protocol. Solar remains a great value and long-term investment, but some of the incentive programs will be expiring soon. All Energy Solar can walk you through the entire process. They can evaluate your property by phone or webinar, and can even complete preliminary design work without visiting your home. So start saving on your energy bill today and visit allenergysolar.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Let's get to the Minnesota update here before we get to some music and the end of the show. Diagnostic testing is revealing steady growth in infections in the coronavirus that causes COVID-19, with the 650 infections reported on Monday, bringing Minnesota's seven-day average to roughly 671 reported cases. Second highest amount of cases was on Saturday of the entire stretch. Just unbelievable. The latest daily case count, the Minnesota Department of Health brought the total infections to 51,803. The state also reported two deaths, bringing the total to 1,576 of the pandemic. State health officials were watching closely for the month-long increase in COVID-19 cases to result in more hospitalizations and death, a pattern that has happened in southern and western states as well. So far, hospitalizations have increased only slightly. I say this because I want to make sure I mention that. I talked about this with Alan Roy in the first segment there. You have an Effie, they have a rodeo there. And they're basically, come on out without your face masks on. We're just going to protest. You know how many people are going to get sick? And you do not have the healthcare system up there to deal with this. And you have a heck of a lot of old people up there. You fools. You absolute. Being Republican is not a defense against coronavirus, you morons. Jeez, I just don't know what else it's going to take outside of you dying or being sick for 2 months before you realize, well, I guess that was kind of stupid, y'all think? Ugh. You know, this is going to get worse. I've been trying to figure out why generally pandemics get bad in the fall, and I think I figured it out. Is that people just get the nice weather around them, they go on out and they enjoy the sunshine, and then they all of a sudden, you know, by the time things start cooling down, it's too late. That's why I think this fall is going to be bad. And where we go, I don't know. I do not know. Thanks to Alan Roy. Thanks to John Rosengren. Once again, and that event over at Next Chapter Books, that's going to be tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Let's Sister Sledge this out of here. Why not? We Are Family. I watched Birdcage. This features prominently in that movie. It's fantastic. Have a great rest of your Monday. We'll be back tomorrow. Till then, see ya. Just let me